The Ain't No Fang Podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
It appears the baseball floodgates are opening. I'm Steve Zinsmeister alongside Derek Monti on the Ain't No Fang Podcast, and we are going to get into that. It does kind of feel like, especially in recent years, free agency and trades in Major League Baseball just kind of take place after the first of the year in January and February. And now that we're about halfway through January, it seems like a lot of deals are finally falling into place. We're going to get into that, how it affects the Diamondbacks specifically and how it affects the rest of the NL West, particularly two teams that appear to be the most dominant in the division. I think you know who I'm talking about. But first, we're going to talk about something that I wouldn't say is controversial, but something that's kind of taken over the baseball world in the last couple of days. And it's a story that sort of involves the Diamondbacks indirectly, and that is Jared Porter and what has come to light recently in the last few days. So basically what happened is ESPN's Jeff Passan, along with Mina Kimes, reported late, Tuesday night, I think, that Jared Porter, who was the assistant GM of the Diamondbacks and then about a little over a month ago was hired to be the new GM of the New York Mets. The news comes out that in 2016, while he was with the Chicago Cubs organization, he sent unsolicited, explicit text messages and photographs of himself to a female foreign reporter who was covering the league and the team at that time. She says that he sent upwards of 60 messages in a row that she did not respond to.
62.
Before sending a picture. I don't know how any man ever has thought this is either appropriate or desired, but he sent a picture of himself, I think you know what I mean by that, to her, and it has now been reported several years later. Derek, where are you on this? I mean, it's hard not to be on the side of not Jared Porter.
I don't even know where to start. It's disgusting behavior, right? When in the history of ever has this ever worked, by the way, just for starters, right? When has that ever worked for a single man in the history? Maybe it doesn't. Maybe those are the cases we don't hear about. But it's just ridiculous behavior from somebody in a position of power. That's the biggest problem here, is that a person that's a GM of a team or in the front office of an organization understands and has to understand that people are going to buddy up to them because they need to get stories and information, especially when it's a journalist of any kind. I think that I definitely can see how at times relationships become so friendly that it can be you can kind of lose sight of your relationship with that person. Okay, so I'm not defending Jared Porter, and I don't even want to start sounding like I am, but right. I'm just going to say, like, with my time covering the Diamondbacks, I consider a lot of people that have been there the entire time I've covered the team to be like friends, like family almost, you know? Sometimes they text me when they're stopping to get something to eat on the way to the stadium when last season we didn't have, you know, a kitchen and there's things like that that they do that is different, you know, makes you feel different. You know these people. You talk about your families with them when you
see
them.
It's like a team within the team.
Yeah, it's really interesting, but it's because for us in the media, that's our point of contact, is like their media team. But when they've been there for a long time and we form relationships, there's times where you might even do stuff outside of baseball together. With all that being said, there is times where you can understand how a relationship could be viewed differently by two different parties in that relationship. One person sees it as maybe a personal interest. The other person is doing it because they want a good inside contact for the team. And
she wants a source.
Sources and information.
Yeah.
To send 62 unresponded to text messages, it's borderline sociopath behavior, right? I have best friends who I've texted three or four times in a row and they didn't respond. And that was enough almost for me to be like, it was almost enough for me to be like, our relationship is over. And I've known these guys since I was like a child.
Right.
You know?
There's no longer a point.
Right.
You continuing to text.
Exactly.
Them.
We have a group chat where sometimes where I'm the one that's said something too many times in a row. I have something else I want to say, but you know what? I'm not doing it because I've already sent too many unresponded to messages. There has to be something inside of you that understands that this person no longer wants to make that kind of contact with you, especially once you've tried to advance on them in a sexual or romantic way. This behavior is completely different from somebody, I think, in a position of power, even than a normal person, because of the fact that they are kind of abusing the fact that they have to know that this person wants inside information and that this is part of their job. It definitely makes it disgusting and awkward and terrible for the woman involved. They just want to come to a job like this that a lot of people want and a lot of people have a passion about, and they just want to be viewed as, you know, another person here and not somebody that, you know, a person within the organization has, you know, a sexual interest in or a romantic interest in. That's the worst part, you know, about so many of these situations for these women is they, you know, they just want to come and do their job to work. You know, I don't ever get bothered or harassed by anybody. I don't even get noticed. My questions barely get answered. I go to the stadium and I don't ever have to think about, you know, the kind of, you know, terrible advances that women experience as journalists on sometimes a daily basis.
Quite frankly, in any industry.
In any industry. You're absolutely right.
But particularly
about
that. In sports, where all of the people that we have our eyes on while watching sports are men.
I just
the athletes and the coaches.
I had a really naive, you know, attitude or, you know, just realization about what was going on until I have friends that are women that work in journalism. I've heard their stories. They've told me straight up some of the things that have happened to them minutes after it happened to them. And it's appalling and infuriating. You want to do something about it. And the problem is that, like, there's not a lot you can do. And unfortunately for a woman, she doesn't want to jeopardize her position and what she's doing to go talk about the fact that the players were kind of harassing her for wearing a skirt, which has happened. And just, again, was so infuriating to me to find, like, I'm like, that actually happens here at a, you know, at a baseball stadium. And like, I get it because athletes, they just have a different, you know, mentality sometimes about, you know, who they are and how they are perceived by people of the opposite sex. But again, that's another power thing. You know, you're a celebrity, you're an important person. That's, you know, awful behavior when someone is there to do her job as a journalist. But again, it's even worse when it's, you know, someone like Jared Porter, somebody in the front office that actually has legitimate reasons to be in contact with people in the media. And instead of doing his job, he's using it to basically come on to somebody that isn't interested in his advances.
There were three anecdotes in the article that I found interesting for different reasons. First among them was her response to the inappropriate picture that he sent, which, by the way, the night the story came out, they called Jared Porter and asked him, was this you? And he went, yep, that's me. Sorry, did it. I've apologized to her, so it's all good, basically, is you know, I'm paraphrasing. And he basically said it was a joke stock image, as if that makes it any better or more appropriate. It doesn't. But what was interesting is the story about how a player, and I believe it was a trainer, helped her, or basically two other people helped her to come up with the response to send to him after that picture, basically replying, saying, this is highly inappropriate, please do not do this again and leave me alone, basically.
Sure.
And I thought that was incredible to kind of get a glimpse into how a foreign-born and foreign-raised person, I mean, you know, you have tons of experience in other countries where you didn't grow up in the same culture, you didn't speak the language initially, you may not have the familiarity to know, what do I say?
Right.
How do I respond?
How do I even phrase this? Because I don't, you know, I'm not aware of how to basically finesse this situation into it not blowing up on me.
Right.
You know.
So to come up with that together as a group is really interesting to me, and that she had people on her side made me feel good. It's the only thing in the article, really, that made me feel good.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. The fact that there was someone there to support her and help her say the correct thing Or at least a professional response to try to just move past
something
this.
That wouldn't escalate it.
Right. I think that she stayed anonymous for fear of repercussions. You know,
right.
She said that, you know, basically in her country, women are treated, you know, worse than what this treatment is here in the United States. For the most part, we try, especially over the last 5 years, to get rid of this behavior, to expose it. Do our best to make it stop, you know, stop blaming women and start blaming men, start talking about teaching, you know, young boys how to treat women instead of it being any other kind of, you know, situation. But there has been a hopeful push to improve this behavior in this country. In other countries, that's not the case, you know, and they're still not making those advances in other countries to treat women in a more equal more fair way. Her, you know, legitimate concerns about this, you know, impacting her job were real. And she ended up quitting journalism because of this incident. That's the most heartbreaking thing to me, is that someone that probably was passionate about what she did and probably very good at it ended up losing her passion for it because of the way that this went down. You
yeah.
know, like I said, this is a different level of behavior when you talk about that many unresponded to text messages. It's harassment. It's crazy. You know, it's crazy behavior.
One of the other anecdotes in the article that really hit home for me, because this whole thing happened while he was with the Chicago Cubs,
mm-hmm.
and then almost immediately following the incident, he gets hired by the Arizona Diamondbacks and was here for the last, what, four-ish years, three,
yes.
4 years. Within there, she tells the story of actively avoiding covering Diamondbacks games mm-hmm. because she doesn't want to accidentally run into Jared Porter at the ballpark, but that eventually she did end up having to cover a game at Chase Field, a ballpark that you and I have either gone to work at or have been there as a fan hundreds of times. And she talked about being afraid while being in that ballpark that we know and love so much, being afraid the entire time that she was going to run into a person who works there. And I can't imagine for myself or for you to go to the ballpark, which we do often, to be fearful the entire time that we might run into somebody who has power over us. And that really hit home because of it's not just because it's the ballpark that we're familiar with, but because I wouldn't want to feel that coming to work here. I wouldn't want to ever have to feel that. And I know that as a man, I'm privileged that I will never have to face that, at least in this sexual harassment context. So I can't imagine. I can't imagine that. The other thing that hit me was it felt like to me in the Valley, see if I'm way off base on this. In the Valley, in sports here, our teams usually end up hiring head coaches and GMs from other organizations that pump these guys out, right? They grow good GM candidates, they grow good head coaching candidates in good organizations, and then we bring them here. We did the same thing with Mike Hazen. He was groomed with the Boston Red Sox to become the next GM. We ended up poaching him. Torey Lovello, same thing. He was a great interim manager, won a championship with the Red Sox, and we poached him as well. Monty Williams is going to be the next great head coach in basketball, a lot of people thought. So the Suns go out and get him. We are a town that brings in those guys. We are not a town that usually grooms good executives and good coaches to go to the bigger markets. That usually doesn't happen. But it did with Jared Porter. Jared Porter was the one guy that I could think of off the top of my head recently in the Valley where our organization helped mold his career and send him off to bigger and better things in a bigger market, being the GM of the Mets. And this is specifically about baseball right now that I'm talking about. Obviously, it's separate from the sexual harassment, which we can all acknowledge is horrible and wrong. But I also felt on a baseball level, we finally had this guy to rally around as we helped Jared Porter get to that next level. Like, he went from the Valley to bigger things. It's usually the other way around.
Yeah.
And I felt like maybe we lost something there. Like the one time we helped develop somebody. And then this happens 37 days later.
I think the,
you know what I mean?
I think the biggest thing there is that the Cubs knew about accusations, according to a Deadspin article. about Did Jared they? Porter and just kind of tolerated it because it never escalated to a point where any kind of charges or anything are filed. And I think, unfortunately, teams don't take this kind of behavior seriously enough until it borders on sexual misconduct,
right,
or something, you know, serious happens. The idea here is that, you know, there are people within baseball that apparently knew about at least the accusations about Porter and really did nothing about it or couldn't do anything about it. I won't necessarily blame other reporters and such because, like I said, with people that I am, you know, colleagues with and friends with, I've been given information and they didn't want me to like run off and start telling people what they just told me.
Of course.
They told me in confidence about something that happened and it wasn't my place necessarily to go, you know, let the team know that something's going on with one of their players or that one of the visiting players is doing this or that, right? It still makes me feel, you know, culpable and guilty about knowing about it and not doing anything about it. I'm a man of action. I unfortunately sometimes don't even think through my actions sometimes because of the fact that I just feel like injustice should be dealt with no matter, you know, where it is. I understand, though, how people can, you know, basically not want to take an action that the person who's telling them this information doesn't want them to take. You know, if she comes from a country where, you know, women are kind of persecuted when they make these allegations because that gets turned around on them as being, you know, somehow the reason why it happened, then you can understand why she might not have wanted to, you know, risk her job or her profession for, you know, making these accusations about essentially a what some people would view initially as a, you know, executive or a scout for a team coming on too strong, you know. But when you get to the point where you're sending pictures of male genitalia and then later you're claiming it's not yours and it's some stock photo.
It's a joke.
What is that about? Why do you have stock photo of male genitalia
yeah,
just
make
saved
it any better?
On your phone, right? How did that process go of you making and selecting which ones you thought would be funny for certain occasions? How many do you have on your phone? That's a weird thing to say. That's a
did
weird
you ask
defense.
That person if you could send a picture of...
No, they're stock photos.
No, of course.
Remember, they're stock photos.
Of course.
He bought a package, huh, and it was one of the photos in the package.
It makes no sense to me.
It
really doesn't.
It's the dumbest excuse for gross sexual behavior.
Can I throw out an idea?
Sure.
Banned from baseball.
I'm not opposed to that.
When I first read into this, I thought to myself, this, and it's not about whose was worse, but in my head, I thought, this is worse than what Pete Rose did. To me. And now the difference is there was a rule in place when Pete Rose, you know, bet on baseball that if you did that, you get banned.
Right.
So he did.
That's
he got banned.
That's the difference.
There is no rule in Major League Baseball right now that if you do this, X is the punishment. Banning is the punishment. I think if baseball is serious about implementing more women in the game, and which by all appearances, that's what we're heading towards with Kimming becoming the GM of the Marlins. If you're serious about it, start banning people from baseball.
What if they implemented a rule now that you would get banned from baseball and then call it the Jared Porter rule?
I'm fine with that, too.
Is that good?
I mean, they would never do that.
Name through the mud?
They would never do that, but okay. we would call it
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we'd call it that.
Because, I mean, well, look at the Buster Posey rule at home plate.
Right.
They didn't name it the Buster Posey rule.
They
but we
should have.
But we all talk about it because he got injured in the base path.
Right.
And then they created a rule, can't be in the base path at home plate, and now we call it the Buster Posey rule. So yeah, we could do that. You and me.
I just think that it's the proper shaming of someone like this. You know, it's funny.
It's
you
unacceptable.
Say, it's funny you say that because the incident I was describing about myself earlier was an incident at Costco where a guy basically groped a woman that was in the same aisle as me. And I didn't really know what to do, but the guy beelined it out of the store without having a cart or any items, and he just left. So that made me, one, realize he was guilty, and two, wonder what he was doing in the store, if he was just there to, like, grope women, right? So I had this plan to cut him off at the pass. He went through at Costco, the checkout aisle, but was trying to go through and then go through the exit. I went through the entrance, which is closer and faster to get out through. And my hope was to make a big enough deal at the entrance that he groped a woman that one of the Costco employees would take over And my personal thought was like, you know, take his membership away so he can't come here anymore. Make him shop at Sam's Club.
Ban him from baseball.
Ban him from baseball, right? But it didn't work out that way because none of the people that worked at Costco seemed to care that I was screaming about that this dude just groped this woman, right? So it was just a really weird incident.
They probably just want both of you off their property.
That's pretty much what they wanted. And so it ended up with me almost fighting this guy in the parking lot, and then one of my friends shaming me for it, telling me that I shouldn't fight strangers that could possibly be armed to the teeth because it is Arizona. I learned a little bit from that, you know, incident, but there was a silver lining. There were three women that had a small child with them that watched the whole thing went down, and they applauded me after I was like walking back in shame to Costco, realizing I had just made this big fuss for no reason, you know.
But it's not even about that. Like, I know you well enough to know that, like, you didn't do it because you needed people to know you were anti-groping.
As a matter of fact, I was embarrassed that these people were doing that.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, it's embarrassing that people have to stand up to this.
It was embarrassing that none of the employees that work at the door at Costco, which you know is a thing, right, decided to take action and do something when I was making such a big deal about this guy doing it, right? I just think that at times we can't sit back and do nothing, right? And that's what a lot of people probably feel about this story. Is it's probably infuriating to so many people if these other people within baseball knew and didn't do anything about it. And that the Cubs let somebody that they knew had accusations like this against them go on to the Diamondbacks without giving them a heads up, or go on to the Mets without, you know, any kind of personal, like, convenient, you know, just kind of, hey, heads up, you know, like, just keep an eye out for this because we had some, you know, accusations about this or whatever. I know that kind of stuff goes on in baseball, so it might not be allowed, but, you know, like employment-wise, but you can definitely give people a heads up about things that have occurred when you're, you know, transferring, you know, or one guy's leaving for another team, and I'm sure that there are character deep dives into their character that they do where this information could come out.
ESPN's Buster Olney had an idea to kind of hire a women in baseball czar, somebody to represent for the entire league kind of the movement towards more inclusiveness for women in the sport.
It would probably be a man.
In theory, it would not. I mean, I don't know who that is. I don't know if it's, you know, Jessica Mendoza, who's become kind of, I don't want to say the face of women in baseball, but she's one of the more prominent names.
Sure.
But it would be a person that would be responsible for outreach within the organizations, each of the individual teams, to teach these players, preferably when they're in the minor leagues, when they're coming up through baseball, and that's thousands of players, teaching them what is appropriate and what's not. I mean, you got a ton of guys, just like this reporter, who are coming from foreign countries, whether that be Latin American countries or European countries in some cases, or Asian countries, and all of those cultures are different. And I'm not trying to make any excuses for any individual guy. We just need to lay down the law of what's appropriate and what isn't in our country and in our sport. And if that means having a women in baseball czar, I'm cool with that. But I also think we should ban them from baseball. And I don't think that's outrageous. Let's move to some of the big movement of players in Major League Baseball. That was about as good of a transition as I could do from that story. Sorry.
It's all you can do. But what I would like to say is I'm pretty sure that MLB teams in their minors teach the players about, like, social media. So it would be nice to see them.
And I'm sure on some level organizations do sexual harassment training.
Sure.
But how much of it is, here's a 20-minute video and they just, you know, play on their phones while they watch it? I don't know. To each their own organization, I guess.
Obviously, they all need to take it because it's not really the players in this case as much as it's the guy in charge of the players. And
well, yeah, this was an executive, so yeah, we're talking full organization here. The Padres, we talked about last week after their acquisitions of Blake Snell and Yu Darvish, two of the better pitchers in Major League Baseball. Well, they did it again, Derek. The Padres went out and got another good pitcher. His name is Joe Musgrove,
who was
pretty much the best player on the Pirates, I think I'm willing to say. Not that that means a whole lot these days.
The most recent best player for the Pirates to let go.
Right, they traded all the other best players.
Yeah, right.
Joe Musgrove, a starting pitcher who will theoretically be the fourth or fifth in their stacked rotation in San Diego.
It doesn't even make sense.
They got a good, decent, good package of prospects back in return, which the Pirates are clearly rebuilding. But Joe Musgrove added to the incredible rotation in San Diego.
My favorite stat about Musgrove last season, he didn't pitch many games. He only had 8 starts, but in 8 starts, he had a 12.5 strikeout per 9 ratio.
Dang. It's pretty good.
He's throwing some heat. He's throwing some heat. And, you know, he had 16 walks.
Yeah, you know.
No intentional balls.
Every time the Pirates traded away their up-and-coming players, it's pretty much worked out for the players and not for the Pirates.
I don't understand what's happening over there.
Garrett Cole goes to the Astros, wins a championship. Austin Meadows and Tyler Glasnow go to the Rays. Glasnow becomes one of the most dominant pitchers in baseball for a short time. And Meadows is awesome.
They are doing the opposite of the game plan you talked about yesterday. Like, they're stuck in phase one.
Yeah.
You know,
they're acquiring the core.
Yeah.
They acquired the core, and then they got rid of
And then they trade off the core before...
They got rid of all of them.
They go to phase two.
Correct.
They got to go to phase two next.
Yeah, correct.
Ugh.
They did it completely the wrong way. And by the way, who's leading the Pirates front office right now? Ben Cherington, who came up with the phase approach for the Boston Red Sox that we talked about last week.
No.
Yeah.
Well, why isn't he
same
following?
Same guy. I don't know. It's the same guy. I just thought about that. So the Padres add Joe Musgrove. This is their fourth major starting pitcher that they've traded for in the last couple of months, if you include Blake Snell, Yu Darvish, and Mike Clevenger, who will be back in 2022. He's going to have arm surgery, or already did, I think. How do you compete with this?
I don't know.
You can't, right?
I don't know what
I know it's
doing.
On paper, but
are they
come
going
on.
With a 6-man rotation? I don't
actually,
know.
Actually, reportedly,
doing.
They might. Wow. And they can.
Why not?
I mean, we
you
talked
can
about
really do whatever you want.
Snell,
in baseball, right?
Darvish, Musgrove, Lamet, Paddock, and that doesn't even include Mackenzie Gore, who's the best left-handed starting pitcher prospect in baseball. And he's got to play in the majors this year. They can run out a 6-man rotation. Because we are going from a season that was 60 games to 162, so you're going to have to stretch out a ton of guys that haven't gotten a lot of action
That's
in the last
very
couple
true.
Years.
Very true.
So a 6-man rotation might not be a bad idea. I just don't know how you compete with this if you're the Diamondbacks. I mean, they have 6 awesome starting pitchers. How many do we have? 1?
Yeah. I mean...
1.
Alex Young's all right.
He's all right. Does he even make the Padres rotation?
No, absolutely not. I'm
Does
not
Madison
sure.
Bumgarner make the Padres rotation?
Not with the numbers he pulled last season.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Merrill Kelly might not even make the Padres rotation. He was awesome for 2 months.
Be careful or they'll take Zach Gallen. I don't even know how, but they
that.
Will. They will.
No, Mike Hazen cannot allow that to happen.
I don't even understand what the Diamondbacks do from this point going forward. I think that one of the things we discussed is a lot of teams are opting out of next season, right?
A lot of them.
This 2021 season is going to be very strange because a lot of teams are just not going to buy in financially to this season. They're not going to make the big moves, which is going to allow a lot of players to stay available on the market. There's going to be teams like the Padres and what the Toronto Blue Jays are seemingly trying to do, which is just take advantage of this. Combine that phase one core that you're talking about with some, you know, top stars that are available right now on the market, whether they trade away for them or bring them on through free agency, and win this season. This season is kind of like open for the taking because a lot of teams aren't going to have fans in the stands. They're not going to bring in that revenue. So they're not willing to risk the money financially like they would in other seasons. This is just going to be one of those seasons that if a team like, especially with a complacent Dodgers team that just won the World Series, a hungry Padres team could easily come up out of nowhere and take this division and, you know, and the NL.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think most people believe the Dodgers are still the number one team in baseball, especially until somebody unthrones.
Dethrones.
I like unthrones.
Nah, it's not the right
game
word.
Of unthrones. The Dodgers are what they are. They're awesome. They're stacked. They're still looking to add another right-handed bat in the middle of their lineup in the infield, and that's just nasty to think about. Then they get surprise additions like Tony Gonsolin comes out of nowhere last season. So they've got a ton of things going for them. The Padres, on that phase 1, 2, and 3 thing we talked about last week, which was the process that the Ben Cherington's Red Sox used to win the 2018 World Series. Phase 1, acquire the core of young players. Mm. Phase 2, start to implement them into the major league club.
Phase three, defeat Thanos.
Right. Phase three, win the World Series, which you usually end up having to go on acquiring big name pitching to do.
Right.
In phase 2/3.
The Infinity Stones.
Correct. The Padres are in phase three. They are acquiring not just top end starting pitching, but all of the top end starting pitching.
I mean, you could say phase two was last season, but they just kind of almost skipped over phase two.
Phase two was last season.
You know, but
phase two was quick.
Yeah. It was a short season. They got rid of it fast.
They went from we're going to call everybody up to, okay, we're ready to compete now.
Well, I mean, come on. They got a nickname, Slam Diego. You know, they started becoming...
Once you have a nickname, you're in.
Oh, my God. And not only that, but they lived up to it. There was just this excitement about this team around the league. And I think you strike while the iron's hot.
You
have this excitement. You have a buzz. Not only that, but you're going to all, you know, have these players this season that... You know, they want to go play with an exciting team that has a good chance to win. So if you're bringing in someone like Joe Musgrove, who went from, you know, this situation he was in with the Pirates to now one of the best teams in baseball, I mean...
Worked out great for him.
How much better is he going to feel and be when he goes out there? How much more confident are some of these pitchers that came from a lineup that had no run support going to go out there with these guys batting, you know, taking over offensively for him? It's going to be a great situation, and it's scary. The Diamondbacks did very little, and I'm not surprised, because what's the point? You know, I
what do you mean they did very little? They went out and got Chris Devensky.
How dare you? How dare you?
On a minor league deal.
Chris Devensky had a 14.73 ERA last season, sir.
It's like that's not a good thing.
No, it's not great. I'll say this, though. You know, I think that it might be the smart move. You know, I hate to say that, I'm going to have to cover them for an entire season, and I know a lot of my fellow fans are going to watch them. It's not great to hear, but at times, would you rather your team spent a whole bunch of money and still came in at third or fourth place in the division, or would you rather that they just kind of cut back, maybe continue to do what they did last year and give some of the young guys an opportunity and some reps, sacrifice maybe, you know, a season that isn't going to have fans in the stands for...
And instead of third or fourth, you maybe are fourth or fifth.
Right. I mean, what's the difference? It's kind of my feelings when a team limps into the playoffs in any sport and you're a fan of them. I understand when your team is on a roll and things are hot at the end of the season and, you know, maybe things looked bleak early on, but they put stuff together. But, like, the Cardinals are a perfect example. The way that they kind of tripped and fell over their last couple of games, they didn't look sharp or ready for the season. They lost a lot of key players. They wouldn't have even been in the position that they were in had it not been for D-Hop's miraculous catch against Buffalo. So I didn't really care to see them go to the playoffs just to get slaughtered by a really good team that would probably steamroll them, you know. And I don't know, again, with the Diamondbacks, if that's what they want. You know, I don't think that they want to go into the season with great expectations, looking at these other teams in their division, one that won a World Series and one that is arguably the hottest team in baseball, both with acquisitions and with the role that they were on during the regular season.
Another organization that I think is definitely on the up and up is the Toronto Blue Jays, you mentioned.
Yes.
I think if we're doing the phase thing, they're like quickly approaching phase three. All that's left is to go and acquire big name starting pitching,
which they're trying to do.
Well,
they're trying to add those key pieces, you know, like you said, the not just the starting pitching, but the big free agents that's right. going to make that big difference for them.
This week they added George Springer, center fielder who came up with the Houston Astros organization, helped them win the 2017 World Series. He's going to be a big addition, big bat in the middle of the lineup, pretty solid outfielder in center field.
Would have been a great addition for the D-backs.
Yeah, but he doesn't fit the timeline. We're talking about.
Does not fit the timeline.
They have a great young core in Toronto. I'm talking about Vlad Guerrero Jr., who seems to be one of the most intriguing power bats in baseball. Kevin Biggio came along at second base. Bo Bichette at shortstop.
I love that they're like the next generation of an all-star team, basically.
And they're all in the infield.
And they're all good,
they're all
too.
Next to each other on the
field,
which is great.
They're all really good.
They have a first baseman named Rowdy, which you can't possibly go wrong there.
Not at all.
So the Toronto Blue Jays are interesting because they do now have that mix. Now, one thing that happened yesterday that was kind of interesting was we both saw this. there were reports after George Springer signed that Michael Brantley, also former outfielder for the Astros, was coming with him, that he was also going to sign with the Toronto Blue Jays to theoretically be a corner outfielder, probably more of a DH for Toronto. And that was reported as if it was done.
By several sources, by
a lot of big names.
Credible sources, yes.
Then all of a sudden, no, sorry. He's actually re-signing with the Astros. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Are we all just going to pretend like we didn't just report that he's going to the Blue Jays? I mean, I understand that these negotiations sometimes are, you know, kind of fringy. They're easily can be swayed either direction, and then all of a sudden you choose the Astros. Like, maybe that's how the negotiations were going down. But this was reported like it was a done deal, going to the Blue Jays. And I was tweeting, I'm like, the Blue Jays are stacked, man. Like, we gotta look out for the Blue Jays in the American League. And then all of a sudden, Michael Brantley's back with the Astros. It was weird.
Realistically, I think this is one of those times where I feel bad for the journalists and reporters involved, because I'm sure that they were directly told by extraordinarily credible sources that this was a done deal, him going to Toronto.
Yeah.
And to a degree, it might have been, you know? It might
Who
have
knows?
Been. It might have been as easy as him getting ready to, like, board a plane and fly somewhere, and
maybe it was an agent.
Got
maybe it was his agent that said, like, oh, dude, they're giving us a great deal in Toronto. We're in.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the Astros upped it.
Right.
You don't know.
We don't know. I mean, that kind of stuff really is wild when you hear the stories later about how deals like that went down.
Yeah.
How close someone was to doing this, or how close a player was to, you know, pulling the trigger on a big free agent move.
I want a deep dive on that,
you know,
on Michael Brantley's Toronto Astros incident.
Yeah, it would be
I want to know what happened there.
Right. I mean,
I can
only compare it to one time I was directly told by a person who I knew that lived in the same building, or, you know, lived like right across the hall from
the
quarterback on ASU, that he was going to be suspended due to he wasn't going to be able to play in a game due to academic
probation.
Yeah, right. And then he ended up playing. And I talked about it, I think, on the show and tweeted about it. And then he ended up playing and looked like a giant idiot.
You're like, I've got a really good source.
Here's the thing, though, is I remember, like, not believing that guy. And he was like, so like, no, dude, you don't understand. Like, they were like,
right.
He was like in the hallway screaming about it. Like, several people here would, you know, tell you that the same story was something that happened. I don't know if it did or didn't. He might have made the whole thing up as
far.
But
know
it's
what?
Somebody who I trusted, right? So it's like,
right.
I can't imagine why this person necessarily would need to, like, contact me for this.
Right.
It's a person who honestly had really good information for me at times about ASU college football that I never reported on. Because
and maybe something happened with that quarterback where, you know, I hate to make it sound like there's collusion of some sort, but like maybe the they have a conversation with their professor and they come to some sort of understanding and all of a sudden you're eligible.
Absolutely.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
That has to happen, right?
It absolutely can happen, right? Because especially if you're like on the phone and you're like arguing loud enough for other people to hear you, there's a good chance you're following up and doing everything you can to make sure that goes
away. That kid
away.
Wanted to play.
Right, right.
Regardless
you
of what
I mean?
Was going on.
So anyway, it's just one of those situations where I definitely, that was my slap on the wrist learn, and I'm glad it was small
right.
enough that not a lot of people lost faith in me as this up-and-coming, if you want to call me that, journalist, right? Like, I was working for a very small website, and it's hard enough in today's day and age with so many blogs and websites that exist to get any kind of credibility unless you work for, you know, a station like ours or ESPN or something like that. It was definitely something I regretted doing, and I realized how dumb it was afterwards. But
sure. It
wasn't like I was trying to fabricate a story or something like that.
Something just happened in between.
Some information was brought to me. I definitely tried to do my due diligence, but got excited because I'm not the kind of person that breaks these kind of stories.
Right.
You know, I don't get to be that kind of source that comes out with that kind of information. I'm sure that a lot of that kind of goes on here, except for the fact that these were the main sources that we trust in baseball to tell us these deals are done. I definitely think, like you said, something happened in this situation between A and B that changed it, but it definitely felt like it was a done deal to Toronto.
Another rumor, shall we call it, is that the Dodgers, remember we talked about last week that they wanted DJ LeMahieu at third base.
They did.
That was an option for them, that they could move on from Justin Turner and just put LeMahieu in at third base. Obviously, LeMahieu has re-signed with the Yankees, so that's not happening. But that doesn't prevent the Dodgers from going out and finding another option. Marcus Semien, former shortstop with the Oakland A's, and could go back to the A's, I suppose. He's a free agent. Could he be an option for the Dodgers at third base? That's the rumor. I pose this to you. If the Dodgers could sign Marcus Semien to play third base, why can't the Diamondbacks sign Marcus Semien to play second base and move Cattell to center? Or you could sign him to play third, like the Dodgers, and move Escobar to second base, depending on which one you think is the better fielder at third. Is that something that appeals to you, Marcus Semien?
I could bring up his on-base percentage. I could bring up his fielding stats. But really, at the end of the day, I think it's about money.
How much does he get? Yeah, that's an interesting question.
I think it's about the fact that the Dodgers have quickly become, you know, the Yankees, where it seems like they're not just going to spend a lot 1 year to win a championship and be satisfied with that. They want to build a dynasty. They've been very deliberate and careful with both building their farm system and their main team with no real care about cost, you know.
There is no phase one or phase two for the Dodgers.
No, it's
they're
phase,
always in phase three.
They're always in phase
they're
three.
They're always in let's go get Thanos.
They're trading away players for, you know, young prospects, and then they're replacing them with free agents that they're probably overpaying and don't need to necessarily bring in. Mostly, though, they've been very loyal to their guys, you know, guys that they brought in early in their career that have been successful for them, or guys that came up through their farm system that ended up being, you know, becoming a star. The Dodgers have been incredibly loyal to their own players, and they've given them, you know, not only a championship now, but a lot of them have been really well paid. I think that there has to be a point where, you know, there's a tipping point. You have a team like the Padres coming in. You have to have a point where the Dodgers are challenged, because if not, they could set themselves up to continue to do this year after year and just be this dominant force that no team in the NL can overcome.
By the way, Marcus Semien was third in MVP voting in 2019. Not this past season, but the year before.
Mm-hmm.
Third in MVP in the last full season that was played. It signals to me that the Diamondbacks can't afford him.
He played all...
Just a guess.
He played all 162 games that season.
Yeah. Has positional flexibility.
Who does that in 2019 and in 2010? Like, they've just been so careful, especially with star players like someone like him, to give him time off. And nope, 162 games, 747 at bats.
Well, I guess when you're on the A's, like, you have no other option. You don't have a lot of guys on the bench usually,
right?
In Oakland, like, if we got good players, we got to get them out there.
Right. The Dodgers, once again, going back to the Dodgers, they can literally put in a completely different lineup on game two versus game one, and it would still be a formidable lineup to face.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of flexibility in their lineup, too.
It's just unfair.
Max Muncy, I don't even know what position he plays.
I don't either.
First base? I think it's first base, but he could play second. He could play third.
He's wild card. That's what he plays.
Cody Bellinger came up as a first baseman, and now he plays center field. Like, how did that happen? So, I don't know. Mookie Betts, he can play a bunch of different places.
Kershaw, he can pitch in the regular season, but still play in the postseason.
He plays one position. That's starting pitcher in the regular season.
That's it.
Let's finish up with this. This seems to be the last big piece missing. There would be two. I would say JT Realmuto is a big piece, but I think most people around baseball suspect he's going back to the Phillies, especially with Dave Dombrowski there now. Are they really going to let the best catcher in baseball walk?
Not when there's so few catchers in baseball that are, you know, all-stars.
There's like four or five really good catchers in baseball.
Yeah.
And he's the best.
We brought up the top 10 and didn't even recognize a couple of them.
No, yeah. I mean, you and I would, but I don't think normal people, like people who just watch baseball, they wouldn't even know who those catchers were. So the big piece that's still missing to this offseason is, where does Trevor Bauer end up? What do you think?
I really don't know. I think Trevor Bauer I know he's not coming here. I know that for a fact.
Well, things didn't exactly end well with Trevor Bauer and the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, it really was. And it wasn't the greatest relationship, and Trevor Bauer has definitely gotten considerably better since then. But
yeah.
I definitely think that he was part of a team that had a lot of young. You know, he was here when there was a lot of young talent here that was kind of blooming, and you didn't really know who was going to be the next big star. Patrick Corbin didn't seem like he was going to end up being the star he was at the time because he was kind of overshadowed by some of the other younger talent that was here at the time. And I remember him winning a rotation spot through spring training based on, you know, just stepping up against these guys when, you know, some of these guys weren't playing great. I think he ends up with the Toronto Blue Jays.
We talked about, yeah. They're kind of in that phase where they just need pitching now.
Right. They need that pitching, and they seem to be okay with spending the money, whereas other teams aren't. I know that some of the other teams that are on his radar are in the NL West, so I don't want to.
You just don't want to.
I don't want to do that.
Just don't want to talk about the Dodgers.
I don't want to talk about the Dodgers.
It's probably the Dodgers. Well, we don't want to talk about the Dodgers.
I don't want to talk about him getting on the Giants either, because the last thing I need to see as.
Why would the Giants want him?
Well, just the.
Well, I mean, anybody would want a pitcher of Trevor Bauer's abilities, but. They're not really in that compete now mode, are they?
Well, I mean, they actually really kind of came up a little bit over the last season or two, and I think that they just see some improvements in their team.
They always have money.
I don't think every team is going to necessarily follow this three-phase plan that you're talking, even though it seems
it's
the blueprint.
It's very much my thing that I picked up from the Red Sox.
No, but you're right, though. I think that it is a good way to look at things, and it's kind of weird because that's where, you know, even if you look back at the Diamondbacks signing Madison Bumgarner, Kyle, leaves you scratching your head. He really didn't, even when he got signed, match up with where the team was at the time. It was an exciting free agent.
I think we talked about that too.
But
we were all excited because how can you not be when your team gets a big name pitcher?
Right.
It's like the Zach Greinke deal too. Like, we were all excited, but then we all have to look each other in the eye and go, oh crap, is this a bad idea?
But Greinke felt different because it felt like the team was going all in because
they
went
after Shelby
Greinke.
Miller deal
right.
too.
This was different. This was like they were trying to replace Greinke with another pitcher that was similar to him in,
right.
you know, kind of crankiness.
Big game hunter.
Yeah, like I don't know what it does other than puts a marquee name on, you know,
somebody to pitch opening day.
Right. Someone to attract fans and keep people interested.
Right.
Someone who has won enough that he'll be complacent with maybe not winning for a couple of years. Maybe that was part of it too. Someone who is okay with coming on and helping another organization build up. He doesn't seem like strongly like the mentor type. I don't know that personally about him. You know, maybe he is. Maybe he's the kind of guy that could provide some information, some valuable information to someone like Zach Gallen or Alex Young. I don't know that. I just know that, you know, we kind of questioned the signing at the time, but we're excited about it. Like you said, now it just seems to make less and less sense as we move, you know, away from quality players that were on this team that we could have kept, like Starling Marte.
Well, we both thought this team was much more advanced a year ago. Like, at this time a year ago.
Yes. But we also didn't know that the Padres were going to be as good as they were or build the way that they did this offseason.
Correct. And, yeah. Well, and we didn't know the Dodgers were going to win a championship, although they basically had the same core at that time, so it's not shocking. But also, the Diamondbacks were coming off of trading for Starling Marte, which solidified center field, and basically he became their best player. So we were coming off of a great year for Eduardo Escobar. We were coming off of a phenomenal year for Ketel Marte. So
I believe
everything
I wrote
was different
in an article
ago.
They were going to win the NL West. So, yeah,
oops.
There's a lot of stupid things that have been said.
So you're thinking Toronto for Bauer. That's your final guess?
That would be my final guess. That would make sense both with the acquisitions and the team, you know, making moves. And I think that would be the kind of city Bauer would like to go to. He doesn't seem like a conventional guy, and I don't know how well he would do in a city like LA or a city like New York. I know that those medias are completely different, but it's also still just where in some cases the media are bigger stars than the players themselves. So it's just a different, you know, relationship. And I think going to Toronto would make a lot of sense.
I agree with you. One other option, it appears that Steve Cohen's Mets have just gone spending crazy. They went out and traded for Lindor, then gave him $22 million in arbitration. They signed several other players, including great bullpen pieces. So the Mets would make sense. If they're willing to just completely spend everything in their pocket, then the Mets would make a ton of sense. And they have other good pitchers. They have Jacob deGrom, who's arguably the best pitcher in baseball. Noah Syndergaard comes back. Marcus Stroman comes back. Another option I've heard a lot about is the Los Angeles Angels. The Angels in Los Angeles. Mostly as an attempt to get Mike Trout to the playoffs. you know, like, we got to stop messing around. We gotta do something that will get Mike Trout to play baseball in October.
Do you think he cares anymore?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, absolutely. For a second, I was like, no, nobody cares. And then I was like, well, Mike Trout cares. Yeah, of course he does.
He cares, yeah.
He wants to play in October.
He's not dead inside yet.
It's not just about playing in October, though. It's about winning a championship.
It really
is. And, like, if you're not trying to, then what are you doing?
That's the bigger thing. That's the thing is that some teams just go all in, and I know it doesn't necessarily work, or else teams would do it all the time. They would just save up for one big year where they would spend a crazy and win a championship. It doesn't work. It probably won't work for the Padres. Even with everything that they're doing, it'll still probably result in them coming in, you know, playing second fiddle to the Dodgers. And then what? You know, like, it's not to say that they don't continue to get better. They, like you said, they have Clevinger come back next season. But it does get to a point where, you know, the fact that a team is both a business and a sports team trying to win games collide eventually.
You want to be competitive, you know? But you also want to make money.
You can't completely sacrifice it, especially when, you know, the future is so uncertain for how this whole situation is going to go, especially for a state like California that seems to have stricter restrictions than other states, you know?
Taxes are going to go up.
That's for sure.
For players and for organizations. So that's another aspect of it. By the way, I'll throw in this nugget. I saw that John Lester signed with the Nationals for like $2 million.
The Diamondbacks could have had John Lester.
John Lester, $2 million.
But you know who we got instead? Chris Davinsky.
I don't want to say anything bad about Chris Davinsky. He was a fine player a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But
he really was.
He was a really good player.
And he hasn't been in sports, you know, he hasn't been in the major leagues very long. This was his fifth season, or fourth and a half, if you want to call last season a real season. But yeah, I'm interested to see what he would do for a new team. He's pitched with the Houston Astros his entire career. So
he's on a minor league deal, so we don't even know if he's a part of the major league bullpen, but there is nobody in front of him.
I think the bigger thing is the experience there is going to really, you know, make a difference. We don't have experienced relievers in our organization.
Tell me about it. I read this line in the story. In terms of service time, right-hander Yoan Lopez, who we're both very familiar with, he has 2 years of service time.
Yeah.
Not much. Yoan Lopez is the most experienced reliever in the Diamondbacks' 40-man roster.
That's impossible.
Yoan Lopez.
What?
Is the most veteran pitcher that we have in the Arizona Diamondbacks organization.
Oh, my God.
Relief pitcher.
Makes me feel old.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
How can that be?
That can't be right.
And I know they went out and got other guys. Like, they went out and got Rondon for that reason. They went out and got Guerra for that reason. They went out and got Holland for that reason. They went out and got countless dudes, Boxberger, Fernando Rodney. That's what they do. They go out and get veteran guys, but apparently right now we're not doing that. We're just waiting for the Diamondbacks to do something. Other than Chris Davinsky. I mean, we'll give him a little bit of credit, but not too much. Is that fair? Do something. That's our message to the Diamondbacks.
Please.
Thanks so much for spending the last countless minutes with us on the Ain't No Fang podcast. I'm Steve Zinsmeister. That's Derek Montilla. We thank you so much for listening here at ArizonaSports.com and on the Arizona Sports app.